Women's economic empowerment is essential to gender equality. Female labor force participation benefits everyone. If women participated in paid work at the same level as men, the annual global GDP would increase by $28 trillion by 2025. Yes, trillion. Economically empowered women exercise increased control over resources, as well as their own time, lives, and bodies, which aids in their overall health and well-being. Health-related issues such as non-communicable diseases, lack of access to family planning services, and maternal health complications greatly impede women's ability to fully engage in the workforce. Many workplaces also lack gender-sensitive policies that take into account women's specific needs, such as paid leave, flexible work schedules, and adequate reporting mechanisms for sexual harassment and violence. Women are also heavily involved in the unpaid and informal work sectors, such as caregiving, which can slow their progression toward economic empowerment. Recently, the Wilson Center's Maternal Health Initiative and the Global Women's Leadership Initiative, with the support of EMD Serrano, held a public forum to discuss the intersections between women's leadership, women's health, and women's economic prosperity. You are listening to Friday podcasts from the Environmental Change and Security Program and the Maternal Health Initiative at the Wilson Center. I'm Sarah Barnes, and today we share highlights from this recent event on gender equity in the workplace, with a particular focus on the Healthy Women, Healthy Economies initiative. In this podcast, we will hear from Eileen Martin, the Global Director of Inclusion at EMD Serrano, the U.S. Division's biopharmaceutical arm of Merck KGaA, Darmstadt, Germany. Here is Ms. Martin on her work of implementing strategies towards improving gender parity in the workplace.
When I joined EMD Serrano a little more than 3 years ago, at the first event that I went to, which was our POA, it was all white men in the front row. And I approached my HR business partner and said, where is everybody? You know, where are the women? Where's the LGBTQ community? Where are people of color? And from that conversation, fast forward 2.5 years later, I'm now in this role full time. So that was a grassroots effort that we started. We didn't even have a Women in Leadership Employee Resource Group at the company. And then 2 years ago, I was interviewing our CEO, who happens to be a woman. So that's very helpful when you do have a woman who's been the only one in the room who really has actually driven this passionately. But we started as a grassroots effort. And then after Healthy Women, Healthy Economies said, hey, how are we doing ourselves? We had to take a global look at how we were doing. I was then asked to lead a global action team, all of this on top of my full-time job. So these were my little side hobbies. And that now has evolved into my full-time job. So the Women in Leadership Employee Resource Group has now grown to an annual summit that we had 250 women last year. We now have a very similar to Mark. We have men supporting women in leadership. It's an entire group of men that are standing behind us. So I think when you get to the power of voice, that you have to be brave and you have to be that person that will speak up and say, this isn't right, but I want to be part of the solution. I think that one person's voice can have tremendous impact, and I'm here demonstrating that today.
When women are healthy, everyone benefits. Healthy Women, Healthy Economies was conceived under the auspices of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, APEC, with Merck KGaA, Darmstadt, Germany, as the private sector founder. The initiative aims to identify and implement policies that advance women's health and well-being to support their economic participation. The Healthy Women, Healthy Economies Toolkit compiles and summarizes global good practices for governments, companies, and NGOs to include and retain women in the workforce. As Ms. Martin introduces in the next clips, the intended audience of the toolkit are those in a position to encourage, develop, and implement policies and programs to improve women's economic participation through improved health. The policy toolkit outlines 5 key recommendations that are integral in the workplace to promote the health, well-being, and economic participation of women. 1, workplace health and safety. 2, health access and awareness. 3, work-life balance. 4, sexual and reproductive health. And 5, gender-based violence.
So Healthy Women, Healthy Economies is really more externally facing and really looking at the interdependencies of the health and wealth of women. And as we were working along with APEC folks on Healthy Women, Healthy Economies, our CEO, Belén Garijo, said, well, how are we doing for our own women? Let's take a taste of our own medicine and see how we're actually doing for our own women. So we really took this internal focus. And what we did was, you know, a really robust look at our data. As you can imagine, a science and technology company, we took a really robust dive into all the data that we had, probably too much. And our findings were really quite astonishing. One was actually incredibly positive. When we looked at our total compensation packages of women, they were actually almost flawless. So we're really, really proud of that. But then when we started to do a deeper dive, and we had the help of Mercer to do that with us, we actually saw that there was this choke point for women at a leadership level that was probably around the mid-management level. And as a result of that, again, you know, taking a cue from Healthy Women, Healthy Economies, we actually formed a global action team to look even further diagnostically of what we could do systemically to remove some of the barriers for women, to help them advance further beyond that mid-manager level. And that action team actually has evolved into me taking this on as a full-time role. So, you know, I'm really proud that we took the best of Healthy Women, Healthy Economies, leveraged it, looked at ourselves, really looking at ourselves in the mirror and taking some action when we saw that there were some areas where we could improve upon. When we talk about the Healthy Women, Healthy Economies toolkit, it is about tying in the health and wealth of women and keeping them productive in the workforce and leading not only to their families' economic wealth, but also to the economy and the GDP, et cetera. So that in and of itself is customizable to whatever country, whatever state that you want to use the toolkit in, very similar to what you mentioned about employee resource groups, right? So what I'm finding that we're launching these women in leadership employee resource groups, and we're doing focus groups just to simply ask the women what they want, what's going to work for them, what are the barriers in Latin America versus Asia Pacific? I mean, there are still some countries in APAC where women shouldn't be traveling alone. So we can't make assumptions as Americans that what's going to fit for us is going to work for the other country. So I think having these very localized focus groups and making them customizable is really the answer. And I think policy is key. I mean, this is a great audience to talk about the public and private partnerships. And when you implement policies to help at least level the playing field, you are going to see significant changes. And in Brazil, we have some great examples of how we took the Healthy Women, Healthy Economies toolkit and had successes that were externally facing. And then we again did the women in leadership look internally and had great successes in both that externally facing and internally facing. And just a very small example is that in Brazil, colorectal cancer is the number two most prevalent cancer, but it wasn't recognized in the coverage of women. So in Brazil, they took the Healthy Women, Healthy Economies toolkit, implemented it, had policy change so that now colorectal cancer is covered and making people more aware that it's so prevalent for women and keeping them healthy and keeping them in the workforce. We also looked at where are women in leadership in Brazil? And at the time, we had a lot of room for improvement. But in the last 2 years, we've had 46% increase in women in leadership in Brazil. Wow. And that's how taking policies externally and implementing them internally can benefit everyone.
When employers implement policies and strategies to hire, maintain, and promote women in the workforce, a woman's juggling act of balancing career, family, and health is relieved. In the United States, there are more than 40 million informal or unpaid caregivers. Two-thirds of them are women, and many mid-level female workers may also be included in the so-called sandwich generation of caregivers, those caregiving for children under 18, as well as for ailing or elderly family members. Strategies like flex care and teleworking are a few approaches companies are taking to reduce the double and sometimes triple burden women face on a day-to-day basis. Ms. Martin provides examples of workplace policies EMD Serrano has implemented to improve diversity, inclusion, and the promotion of women.
When we're looking at diversity and inclusion, there's no better example than diversity without inclusion than yesterday's NASA mistake of not actually having a suit the size for women. So I think that really, you know, for women, it probably wasn't very surprising because we feel some of these micro inequities every single day. But getting back to the business case, and in particular the business case not only for all diversity and inclusion, but the business case for gender diversity. I mean, the Boston Consulting Group shows that for every 1% increase in gender diversity, you get a 3% increase in revenue. So if you want to have a more profitable company, just bring in more women. It's as simple as that. So I'd like to hit on that. And also, we're actually using what's called Job Analyzer. So we're actually looking at our job descriptions through a software that actually ferrets out some of these, you know, micro inequities, again, of things that might scare off women. Such, for example, hacker is apparently a word that if you put that into a job description, it will definitely defer women. Something that we're actually talking about, but we haven't put in place yet, is actually removing college degrees. Because you can increase diversity exponentially by saying a bachelor's degree in XYZ or like experience of 5 to 10 years. And that will actually by default increase diversity as well. The Boston Consulting Group had a study where they showed that if there are 4 finalists for a job opening and one of them is a woman, she has a 0% chance of getting the job. Not only does she have a 0% chance, but If you want a woman to have 50-50 chance, there have to be 50% of the finalists as female. More importantly, the people doing the interviews have to be also gender balanced. So if you have just men, whether it's, you know, men of any color doing the interviews, that's going to be biased. So if you have 50% women and 50% men doing the interviews, and if you have 50% of the finalists as women, that woman's got a shot. Let's forget about 9 to 5, right? So, you know, as women, we tend to have the either the double burden or the triple burden. So we have to be at work. We still have to be the one that, you know, is going to be getting called by the school nurse. At my age, I'm taking care of teenagers and my 90-year-old father. So that then becomes a triple burden. So we actually created a program at EMD Serono called Embracing Carers. And we've created an employee resource group to actually help support people at work. And we also have a flexible work policy, so we're not 9 to 5. You know, if you want to work at home, let's leverage technology. Let's really redefine what a 9 to 5 day actually looks like. And maybe it's 7 to 2, and maybe it's a compressed schedule, and maybe you're working from home. But also leaning in, getting the resources that you need to be at work and to be present when you're there, and leaning into, again, some of the technology that would make it better for us not to be stuck in an office 50, 60 hours a week, because that just doesn't work for women as we're juggling all of these priorities. I think sponsorships are really critically important. Women tend to be over-mentored and under-sponsored. And the key difference really is that a mentor can really cheer you on, be your advocate, but they don't have the political or the social capital to pull you forward in the organization. So a sponsor has to be somebody who can pull you from behind, put their political and social capital on the table, and pound their fist and say, yes, I'm going to bring Tracy forward, and here's why. So I think that's a key piece for women as well.
Thank you for tuning in to this edition of Friday Podcast. Thank you to Eileen Martin for her participation and commentary. If you'd like to learn more about gender, health, and economic empowerment, please visit our website at www.wilsoncenter.com/maternalhealth or follow us on Twitter at @Wilson_MHI.